straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first.
On Second Thought, episode 220, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our good friends at Bud Light. Drink them if you got them. No judgment here. My name's Cedric Golden. I'm joined by the Duck, Kirk Bowles. And Duck, it took 220 episodes, but we got one of our favorite college baseball coaches to join us on our little podcast. TCU coach Jim Schlossnagel is on the line. The Horned Frogs lead the Big 12, and they host the Texas Longhorns in one of the biggest baseball series in the country. Three-game set on Friday in Fort Worth Lupton Stadium. 7:30 p.m. first pitch on Friday on ESPNU. Coach, how are you today?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me, and looking forward to a great weekend.
Yeah, is the weather going to cooperate?
Knock on wood, I believe so. It's certainly going to be better than what you guys dealt with last week with Tech, and we had one cold night up in Morgantown, but the rest of it was pretty good. So we're excited. Should be in the 80s, and hopefully not too windy, but we'll see.
Nice. Well, Sid, you'll like this. Jim, you remember on our season opening conference call for the Big 12 coaches, the preseason call, do you remember the question I asked you?
Probably asked me about the series.
No, I asked you about the all-conference team.
The all-conference team, that's right.
Preseason team, Cedric, had zero, count them, zero TCU Horned Frogs. And here they are in May at the top of the standings.
It's just so great that the people that choose those teams are so on top of it. I mean, thoroughly researched and just almost like Nostradamus, what was going to happen in the Big 12. It's just I'm sure that warms your heart, Coach.
Yeah. Honestly, you know, given the pandemic last year and the fact that if you went position by position, we haven't, you know, and I said this to Kirk on that call, we have an older team, but we don't have a very experienced team because we have, you know, we had transfers. Our entire weekend rotation that'll pitch this weekend, Russell Smith, Austin Krobe, and Johnny Ray, going into the season, had a combined one Big 12 start. So, again, if you went position by position, I felt, with the exception of maybe Halen Green, a relief pitcher, I felt like that was probably accurate. But I would also be lying if I didn't say it was, you know, motivation for some of our players. And we've had some guys have some really good seasons, and we've had three freshmen really play well, and certainly nobody knew about them. So we'll see how the season plays out. But I'm anticipating a few Horned Frogs being on the postseason list.
I love to hear that. How much attention do these kids pay to these preseason teams? Because it can be such a crapshoot, Jim.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think kids are kids. They take a look at that stuff. It's all over social media. But I think they know at the end of the day, it doesn't carry any weight. Just like a preseason ranking. So it's all about how you play throughout the course of the season. And I'm pretty sure, at least I hope, that, you know, our guys would much rather end up in Omaha and be playing there than worry about some individual things. When, as we always say, you know, when the team goals get met, individual goals get met. And you put those first and everything else take care of itself.
Well, TCU sitting there at 33-10 on the year, third in the nation, 15-3 in the Big 12. Has it come together like you thought it would in your best case scenario, Jim?
Well, I'm a pitching guy, so in my most best case scenario, our starting pitching would have been to this point a little more consistent, pitch deeper into games. It's with this COVID roster. I mean, we don't normally carry more than 14 or 15 pitchers on a team, and we've used 19 pitchers this year.
Wow. Wow.
And that's ugly. That's because the starting pitching hasn't been, for example, you know, Texas really can count on a lot out of Ty Madden and the guy that pitches on the second guy that pitches on Saturday,
Tristan Stevens,
who's been such a great strike thrower,
right,
for Coach Pierce and even Hanson, who I know I'm sure will be in the weekend rotation this weekend. Yes. Those guys have been super consistent in terms of throwing strikes and pitching relatively deep into games. We haven't had that as consistently. Therefore, we've had to try to figure out a bullpen minus Charles King and Halen Green of a bunch of new pitchers. And so we've spent the whole season, I think what basketball coaches call shortening your bench, trying to figure out what those 8 to 10 pitchers are going to be. And I believe we've found that now here at the end, and that's why we've pitched better. But I guess, you know, the story of our team would be that. And then the fact that we've really played good team offense, and that's what's, you know, propelled us to this point. But we all know, and you guys have been around, you know, baseball as long or longer than me, you know, to me, the game begins and ends with starting pitching. And when you're facing a Ty Madden, or when you're in a super regional against somebody, you're not, you don't really bang your way to Omaha. And so you better be able to match up on the mound. So that's what we need to continue to be, to improve at.
I took a look at your stats, and Johnny Ray, your sophomore right-hander, he was Friday starter last year before the pandemic hit. He took some lumps early in conference play, but he rallied nicely. I know he's got 10 starts. 4.93 RA. I know that's not your standard. How concerned are you about that third spot? Because, you know, when I covered Texas baseball, Augie Garrido always said, in a tournament situation, you want 4 starting pitchers because you just never know. So how big a concern is that third spot and the depth on your starting pitching?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real concern. There's no doubt about it. The third, and we haven't even really established a fourth guy all year. I think we've done a nice job of piecing it together. A freshman named Luke Savage has really come on in the last 3 weeks, a guy that we were planning on redshirting. And Johnny, he started the season as our Friday night guy too. He opened up in the Rangers Stadium against Ole Miss. And then he hit a two week, he got hit with a COVID protocol contact tracing thing. And that, you know, that really kind of was a bump in the road for him. And now he's just trying to, you know, he's trying to just be more consistent. He's a guy he'll flash brilliance for a certain stretch, and then he'll, you know, be inconsistent and give you, it's the free base runners. If you're looking at the stats, he's probably got 24 or 25 walks, and, you know, that's just not what anything that we're about. And he knows that. And, but I do think that just like most of our Omaha teams are, you know, we've pitched well down the stretch. I mean, Brian Howard was a really great pitcher for us, and his nickname on ESPN in Omaha in 2016 and 17 was Big Game Howie. And that's because his ERA was always in the high threes or fours. And then the last 5 or 6 starts of the season, you know, at A&M or in the College World Series against, you know, Coastal Carolina. I mean, that's when he was at his best. So that's what we're counting on. But you've nailed it. That's what our concern is. And if I was the Texas coaching staff, that's what I would be telling our team, that, you know, these guys are meant to be had, and we're just going to have to play our best.
I like the fact that you say you're pretty good on offense. Yeah, 302 as a team batting average, 17th in the nation, 360 runs, which is the tops in the nation, 51 homers, all kind of paced by your star Phillip Sykes in the outfield, hitting 377 with 50 RBIs. I think Phillip Sykes might be on that all-conference team. Just a hunch.
Yeah, I mean, he should be in the running for player, you know, one of the players. And there's a lot of great players in our league. And
right.
I know Melendez is having a great season for them, for Texas, but he should be in the running for player of the year for sure. But, yeah, Bill Mosiello, our third base coach, runs our offense, and he's just has done an awesome job. And it's really an interesting mix. We loved our team last year, and we have the entire team back. We have eight seniors, five guys in their sixth year of college, three guys in their fifth year of college. Wow. We had a guy turn 25 last Wednesday. And I said, you know, I've coached against BYU a lot, but I've never felt like I've coached at BYU.
Is that guy a player? Is he a player, the 25-year-old?
Yeah, Gene Wood. Yeah, he was a grad transfer from Alabama last year. And yeah, he was already in his fifth year. So we have five guys that are in their sixth year of college. So but going back to the kind of the underlying theme of our team is that we loved our team coming back. And then we have these three freshmen that we knew at the end of fall practice that these guys are really good players and they need to play, not just to make our team better, but for the future of our program. So it's an interesting mix. You know, you have an 18-year-old followed by a 25-year-old in the lineup. So
like a major league baseball team.
Exactly. It's like a prospect
game.
It's like a prospect coming through AAA and you got the old guy who's winding down and the young buck who's coming on his way up.
Well, talk about your other two freshmen. You mentioned Luke Savage. Talk about the three of them, what they've done for your team.
Yeah, you know, the three position players, Elijah Nunez, Luke Boyers, and Braden Taylor. Those guys have just been great for us. You know, they've had their moments and they've been tested just like everybody else. But Nunez, I think, there were times where I think he was leading the country in walks. His batting average isn't great, but he leads off for us. His on-base percentage is outstanding. And he's one of those guys that he takes pride in being exactly that. You know, he's a lot of times a young player who's not very big. He's not self-aware enough to know who he is. Like, I think Hodo for Texas knows who he is. His job, he can run, he can get on base, he can steal bases. And Nunez knows who he is. So he doesn't try to play big as a little guy. Luke Boyers is a really good 5A quarterback at Bernie High School and supreme athlete, hasn't played nearly as much baseball as other people, but he's a switch hitter, real twitchy athlete. You could see him playing like strong safety on a football team and he's just getting better as the season goes on and plays more. And then Braden Taylor is real interesting because he's from Utah, wasn't highly recruited. Bill Mosiello watched him play in Arizona for a couple weeks and loved him. And he's kind of your sweet swinging left-handed hitter, can play all three spots in the infield. We didn't see the power that he's had this year in fall practice, but he's kind of learned how to manipulate the bat when he gets in a leverage count to be able to, you know, drive the baseball. And the strikeout numbers have gotten higher, but you'll trade it, I guess, for the power at certain times. And so those are three guys that are going to be kind of the guys we build around for the future.
The one thing that I like when you mentioned the seniors, and hopefully I have to go on a Mormon mission trip after the season's over, the BYU thing. But five times in the College World Series since 2017, and these guys are looking for five times since 2014. These guys know what it's like to get to Omaha, just like Texas Tech, some of their guys do. One of the Texas players, I believe it's Trey Faltine, the shortstop, said that Tech is where Texas wants to be. They want to get to Omaha like Tech does, like TCU does. How much does that experience help out, especially you had these young guys coming back from a pandemic? How does it help to have those older guys that kind of can pave the way and let them know, you know, there is a light at the end of this tunnel?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's enormous. I mean, I told our freshmen in the fall, I said, you guys don't have any idea how fortunate you are to have the resources of these older players. Because, you know, any really good team, you know, we call it like coach fed, but player led. So, you know, Zach Humphries, Halen Green, Charles King, those guys were part of that 2017 team. And I can just, you know, hey, eventually you get tired of hearing your dad talk. Eventually you get tired of hearing the head coach talk. But when you have those guys say, hey man, here's why he's going crazy over how we played against whoever on Tuesday night. Or here's why, you know, because at the end of the day, every single game has value, you know, And then when you get in those postseason games, that you can even lean on those guys more and say, hey, nothing needs to change. Or when you get in like a series this weekend, you know, this weekend is going to be as COVID packed as we can possibly make it in Fort Worth. And it's going to be the atmosphere that we've all missed because of COVID last year or whatever. And so, you know, those older guys can just say nothing changes. You just enjoy it for what it is and you play. And hearing that from a teammate versus hearing it from the coach who talks all the time is obviously has way more value, way more weight. So we're fortunate to have, you know, those, all the seniors, but especially those three.
Well, I know, as Sid said, you've been there five times. And 2017 was the last time. I know you get used to that, and I know you're itching to get back. And when you've gotten there, y'all have tasted success. You know, y'all went two games to three games. So y'all stick around when y'all go.
Yeah, man, we've been, you know, we've been of the five times, I think we've been a win away from the championship series. 2016 was the toughest one. We're sitting there in the driver's seat, and we have to win one game, and Coastal Carolina has to win three.
Yep.
And you got to give them credit, man. They, you know, they won the games. They beat our best pitching, and then they end up winning the national championship. So, and then same thing, you know, Vanderbilt kept us from playing in the title. Florida, we had to beat Florida twice. We beat them the first time. So it's just, you know, I mean, it's tournament baseball, and you keep knocking on that door, and hopefully, you know, we can turn the corner at some point soon.
What worries you about these Longhorns? Tech got after them this weekend, and Texas was able to find some offense on Sunday to win 11-3. But what really scares you about them? What's your biggest concern?
I mean, number one, obviously their pitching is just going to smother you. I was kind of hoping Hanson wouldn't figure it out too quick enough to get on the weekend. The one thing about ESPN Plus and the Longhorn Network, you know, is I get to watch a lot of games. I mean, I don't have much of a life. I don't play golf or do much. So I go home and watch games. And so I've watched a ton of baseball this year. Witt has had he's kind of most valuable pitcher, I think, for them. He can pitch in any role and gives them length out of the bullpen. And Quintanilla is now throwing strikes. And so, that would be the first thing, is that they're going to smother you with power, mainly right-handed pitching. And then Hanson has really figured out his season here at the tail end of the year. And then offensively, obviously, you know, they're very similar to us in that there's a very good mix of speed. They bunt more than we do, but they have a very good mix of speed. And then those bangers there in the middle of the order with Zubia and Melendez and Cam Williams. And so it's a very, you know, very good lineup. The key against Texas to me always has been, even when Augie was there, and this is really against any good offense, you got to get the leadoff hitter out. Because then if you don't, then you're dealing with Eric Kennedy and how he handles the bat, and you're dealing with Hodo and how he handles the bat. And before you know it, you're worried about getting out on a bunt and you make a bad pitch and somebody hits a three-run homer. So that's, you know, the challenge is just going to be for us is we have to match their starting pitching. We're going to have to throw a lot of strikes. When they bunt, just get an out. Just make sure we get it out. And if you do that, then you don't lead normally to too big, you know, innings, and then we'll just have to try and compete with them offensively.
Well, you know the value of free passes. I think y'all had 11 in game two up at Morgantown to beat West Virginia. So those always come back to haunt you. As long as you've been in the league and around college baseball, does Ty Madden remind you of anybody? You know, he's got a real compact delivery and knows what he wants to do and pitches within himself and all that stuff with great pop. Anybody that you would compare him to, Jim?
Well, I mean, the pitchers, that those right-handers that they had on the 2010 team, Taylor Youngman, Workman,
right?
Cole Green was different arm slot, but he reminds me of LSU had a guy that went in the first round named Alex Lang. who has just really good down angle fastball, high velocity, and real short, firm breaking ball. And that's what Ty does. The difference with Ty versus Lang is Madden really throws his a lot for strikes. And Lang, he was a guy that if you didn't chase it, then he didn't throw it in the strike zone a lot. And at least against us and when we watched him. But Ty just really sticks that breaking ball. So, yeah, the fastball is electric. But, you know, his ability to stick his breaking ball in any count versus right and left-handers. And then, you know, if you're the Friday night pitcher at the University of Texas and you've been doing that for 2 years, I mean, just your confidence, your swagger, your, you know, he understands the weight of that. I'm guessing I've never met him. He's just, you know, he's your typical big Texas right-hander that's going to pitch in this game for a long time. And, you know, I'm hoping he has some dishpan hands this weekend and maybe that blister will pop, but we'll see.
Oh, man.
I'm kidding. I don't wish bad on any player.
No, but that's the most baseball thing to say. Baseball people talk like that. They're looking for that little edge. Don't want him to be permanently hurt, but it's a little tweak here and there.
I truly think and I've told Del Conte this, I think the best thing for the University of Texas is Ty needs to take the weekend off, get that thing healed up, and just be ready for the postseason. He does not need to pitch.
I'm sure you have his best interest. Did Del Conte have a comeback from that?
Oh, he's the biggest sandbagger on the planet. So,
oh, you're killing me. You're killing me.
I know. We're just trying to get along down here.
Yeah, we're having a tough time. We're just going to try to hang in there with you guys.
I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they do it on the penny budget that they got going.
Exactly. Hey, I got one question. I was looking at your schedule. March 14th, y'all lost 2 out of 3 to Gonzaga. You're 10-6 on the season, and you're outscored 30-16 in that series. You're since then, you're 23-4 since mid-March, and 2 of those 4 losses are to Texas Tech, which Texas can identify with. Did anything change? Did you give the pep talk of all pep talks? Did you make any lineup changes or anything, Jim?
You know, I think there was a stretch there where we had some guys out. That was the 2-week period where we had Ray and Marcelo Perez, a couple other guys weren't available. Gonzaga, by the way, is really good. The 2 of the best teams we've played all season are Liberty and Gonzaga, and you can look at the RPI and it'll tell you that. We went to Louisiana Lafayette and they beat us pretty good on Friday night. And the guy that pitched against us used to pitch here. He went to a junior college, got better, and he may be the pitcher of the year in the Sun Belt, named Eric Getty. And we did have a meeting that night, and I got into the team pretty good about a few things and just walked out. But then those seniors I'm talking about, they kind of supposedly took over. And so I think if you talk to the players, I mean, the teams that meet the most are the teams that probably lose the most games. So meetings, I think, are overrated. But sometimes if the players are involved themselves, and I wasn't in there when the players met, they can have an impact. And we won the next 2 games. And those were 2 big road wins in a relatively hostile environment, at least COVID hostile. And then we've played pretty well since and gotten some guys healthy. So, confidence is a big thing. And, I think when you come to the ballpark and Texas had that in the month of April, when you come to the ballpark and everybody's feeling good about themselves, that can go a long way for a team.
Yeah. Well, how many fans are you hoping to get in there? Stadium this weekend, Jim? 5,000-10,000?
Is that recorded button still on?
Damn right it is.
I mean, we're at 50%, boys. So we'll 50%. I don't know what the denominator is, right? But we're going to have as many Horned Frogs in there as we can possibly legally fit, I guess. So
I was in Papado's last night, and there's supposedly at 50%, but for some reason there was a 20-minute wait to get our seats. So
kind of like the American Airlines flights we've been on, where you're shoulder to shoulder with a million people. And
how is that right now? We haven't flown in such a long time. Yeah, how are the airlines, the lines, are the planes pretty filled up?
Yeah. Now we chartered Morgantown, but we flew American to Lubbock and it was packed. So every commercial flight that we've been on has been absolutely packed. Airport's been easy to get around, but the planes have been packed. So how a baseball stadium can't be wide open relative to an airplane, I don't know.
Outdoors. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I think we're headed there, and hopefully the NCAA tournament, you know, I think they've announced 50%. Maybe between now and then that can be loosened up a little bit, College World Series, but it's just, you know, I don't want to be too ungrateful. It's good to be playing again. And
we'll take it, man. We'll take it.
And to have the, you know, the weekend that we're about to have, regardless, I mean, obviously we want to win, and I know Coach Pierce's team wants to win, but just to have this opportunity to get something like this back going in the state is awesome.
Speaking of that, is this series critical to both teams hosting or one team hosting a super regional? Or do you think both teams possibly could be hosts of a super regional if y'all go that far, both teams?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think if you look at the eight super regional things, I think if we're the number two RPI league, then we, our top two teams certainly deserve to be in that mix. And now that's regardless of what happens this weekend, as long as Texas takes care of business down the stretch, we take care of business down the stretch, play good baseball. I mean, you figure out of the eight, four maybe from the SEC, two from the Big 12, the ACC, Notre Dame's having an awesome season. They're certainly deserving. And then you're one, you know, one from either the West or some other team that has a high RPI and has had a great year. So that's my own personal opinion. Kirby Holcutt's on the committee, hopefully, and I know he'll fight hard for us.
Yeah, it's interesting that you and Texas are 1-2 in the standings, and Tex won 4 out of 6 from you two. That shows you how top heavy this league is.
Yeah, and Tech did that without their best pitching, and you know, some of it will be back and some of it won't. So and don't forget about Oklahoma State. Now they've played the last 3 weekends without their number one and number three pitcher, and if they get those guys back. That's a team. I don't know, you know, if they'd be in the top eight, but they're certainly host worthy and could make big noise in the postseason.
Right. Well, hey, are you ready to play our hot corner with us?
I have no idea what that is.
The hot corner is when we have our first guest on, we throw 3 or 4 questions at them that are totally unrelated to what they do. And just give us a quick answer on each. Okay.
Coach has to play hot corner. So that's
there you go.
Okay, so if Jim Schlossnagel was not a college baseball coach, what profession would he be in today?
Well, I was talked into being a coach because I was originally I was a journalism major headed to be a sports writer.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Oh,
the world didn't need another one of those. I can tell you that now.
Who steered you right is what I want to know.
My college coach, Rick Jones.
Tell him to give me a call.
He talked. I actually worked. I'll send you some of my articles. I started off when I was a sophomore in high school. I was answering the phones on I would play a high school basketball game on a Tuesday and Friday night. I was 16. Drive to the Hagerstown Herald Mail, and I would answer the phone as the high school coach was called in the box score and type it up on the, what was it called, Agate or something like that.
Yeah,
that's exactly.
I would type that up, the box score, and then they let me start to write the summaries. And then in my senior year of high school, I was covering basketball games, baseball, all that kind of stuff.
So, oh, my God. You could have been a real over somebody.
We both had the very same experience. you're in charge of movie night and at the Schlossnagels, and some friends are coming over, and you have to figure out 3 movies to show. What 3 movies would you show?
We were talking about this the other day. What the question was, what movie, when it comes on, no matter how many times you've seen it, can you have to watch it? I'm going to go Good Will Hunting.
Lovely.
Fletch. And most people don't know even who Fletch, these are players don't know Fletch. And I will go my favorite baseball movies, For the Love of the Game. So obviously Augie was a big star in that.
Augie, nice. Yeah,
that's my favorite baseball movie. So I'll go those three.
Augie had that great line. What do you say? Wreck it. Wreck it.
We're just so glad you didn't say Shawshank Redemption. Everybody always mentions Shawshank Redemption.
We always love that.
That's my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah, that's definitely one I can't turn when it comes on.
Okay. You're going to a deserted island. You can take only one thing with you, and it cannot be a loved one. So what item would you take to a deserted island?
What item would I take to a deserted island? I don't know. This sounds really bad. I guess I'd take my phone.
Might help you get off.
So I could get off, and so I could pay attention to the scores and send some good pictures out to everybody that I'm chilling on an island while y'all are working. So,
last one, Coach. Your celebrity crush.
My celebrity crush. Well, you can't be 50 years old and like name a girl that's like 29. So to
keep it very uncreepy, pretend you're 25 and who is your celebrity crush?
Well, when I was a kid, my celebrity crush was Jacqueline Smith. The hottest Charlie's Angel ever.
Oh yeah.
I you're so much more mature than me, and because you grow up like we're around the same age. So Gilligan's Island was a big deal. And I thought that Ginger was the bomb. Yep. But when I turn like 20 or 21 and it comes on and I go, oh my God, that Marianne was hot.
Yeah, she was.
There was no contest there, as it turns out.
She just passed away, right, Pam?
Yeah, she did, not too long ago. Well, that's what I got is, besides your journalism major, give us one thing about Jim Schlossnagel that people don't know. It could be a favorite food. It could be, oh, my God, you're addicted to pretzels. I don't know.
My one vice is I am a caffeine drink guy, just one sugar-free Red Bull in the morning. I've never tasted coffee. I've never even tried it. I don't like the smell of it. I can't stand coffee flavored food. But I guess you could say that, or, I mean, I'm a pretty private guy. I don't do much. I don't play golf. I don't hunt. I like to fish every now and then, but I really enjoy my job. I think it's a lifestyle, not a profession. So pretty boring dude, really.
And do you have one skill that people don't know about you? Maybe you're a world-class juggler or a ventriloquist or
I can play the piano, but only with my right hand. I've never had a piano lesson, but I played the trumpet through middle school, so I can read music.
Wow.
And play, I guess you would call that the melody, but I can't play the chords. So just, I can read the music and figure it out and play it by ear. But just with my right hand.
Well, sound like you're halfway there. You could play the organ at the the stadium on Friday to knock things off. So
yeah, that'd be good.
It's been fun, Jim. We appreciate it, man.
All right. Thanks, fellas.
Good luck to you the rest of the year, and hope we'll all be at Omaha more months.
That's the best place to meet up in the College World Series. So thanks for all you guys do. Appreciate you.
Longhorns, Horned Frogs, Friday night, 7:30, Leptum Stadium, ESPNU. Check it out. It's going to be a great series, and we appreciate Jim Schlossnagel for joining us.
See you guys.
Bye, Jim.
See you, buddy.
You know, to be able to even be considered in the NFL draft is an unbelievable blessing and something that I've always dreamed of. From an emotional standpoint, I'm just so thankful. I know that very few people get to have this opportunity. So I told myself going into it that I wouldn't waste, you know, any of this opportunity on any negative emotion, regardless of what that looks like. And so I'm just so thankful to be in this position, to play this great game, and play at the professional level. I'm super excited to get a chance to continue to learn and play this great game. And it's something that, you know, I'll never take for granted, and I can't wait to make the most of it.
Duck, great interview with Coach Schlossnagel, but let's move on to football. Big news coming out of the 40 acres. Your Texas Longhorns had five players taken in the NFL draft. None of them went in the first round. That's kind of the lay of the land now, six straight years without a first rounder. Real quickly, Sammy Ellinger went to Indianapolis in the sixth round. That's the big name. But the earlier draft picks were offensive tackle Sam Cosmi to the Washington football team in the second round. Then Joseph Osai, the edge rusher, goes to Cincinnati in the third round. Taquan Graham, a defensive lineman, in the fifth round to the Falcons. And Caden Stearns, the defensive back, to the Broncos in the fifth round. Duck, of all of those, the man's voice that you heard entering this segment is really excited about his opportunity. Sam Ellinger to the Colts, and Carson Wentz is the starter. The question is, for how long? Because Carson don't stay healthy.
He sure didn't in Philadelphia, and he's pretty much unproven. I mean, Nick Foles was the one that took that team into the postseason and won a Super Bowl. So, yeah, I thought it was just a great landing spot for Sam Ellinger. I mean, he had a hugely productive college career. You know, we talked with our own Cat Vasquez last week that he might not even be drafted because – and that might even be a good thing because you can pick your teams. But I don't know if he would have picked a better team than Indianapolis where he ended up.
I really like the look. They have a really good offensive line. They don't give up a whole lot of sacks. The guy that they brought in is not Phillip Rivers, who started 240 straight games in his final 15 seasons, which is second all time to Brett Favre among quarterbacks. Carson's anything but an Iron Man, and if Sam can figure out a way, and that's a big if, Doc. I'm not trying to say Sam's going to go in there and be a world beater. But if he can figure out a way to beat out Jacob Eason for that second string role, Jacob Eason was not impressive in college and did not play a game in the game last season. Sam Ellinger could be playing some football. He could have some real live game action as a rookie.
He could. Got a chance to prove himself in the preseason, probably. You darn sure don't want to waste Carson Wentz in the preseason games. So
they didn't play him last year.
Yeah. So the thing is, you know, I think Frank Reich is wedded to Carson Wentz. He went out and got him. So he's going to give him every chance to do the job or fail.
But I'm not saying Carson Wentz is going to lose his job to Sam Ellinger. Right. I'm saying Carson Wentz is going to get hurt. And Frank Reich can't control that.
We just don't know who's going to get hurt.
Carson Wentz is going to get hurt. If he doesn't get hurt, he's not Carson Wentz.
I wrote in my nine things, Indianapolis would even be a great spot for Aaron Rodgers. You know, it sure sounds like Aaron Rodgers, not to get off the topic too far, but doesn't want to play in Green Bay, and the Colts would be a good spot for him. But I think it's a perfect spot for Sam. He can kind of bide his time. The coaching staff's going to love his work ethic. He's going to bring it every day. He's very similar to Colt McCoy. He's going to be heavy into the game prep, and he'll be ready to go. And he might have a chance as a spot starter. He might be a career backup who makes a whole lot of money.
Just like Colt did.
And saves wear and tear on their body. So, but yeah.
I mean, Colt's not stumbling around these days. Colt looks good, and Colt's pockets are fat.
And isn't it amazing that Sam's the first Longhorn quarterback drafted since Colt McCoy after 09? It's been a minute. It's been a minute.
Well, here's the thing on that, Duck. You're only as good as your quarterback.
Sure.
There's a reason the Texas Longhorns haven't been a serious title contender since Colt left.
That's reason number one.
Garrett Gilbert was a bust, and Garrett Gilbert we thought had potential to be the next great Texas quarterback. It didn't happen that way. And so they've gone through the David Ashes, the Tyrone Swoopses, the Case McCoys, and then the Sam Ellingers. And Sammy was a fine college quarterback, but he wasn't on the Colt McCoy, Vince Young level. He wasn't. Nice numbers, but he wasn't on that level where you go, this guy is going to lead him to special places. So I'm very pleased that he's getting a shot. I wondered if he'd get drafted. I did. We talked about it with Cab last week. But he's in a place where if history means anything, and sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't, I think that he has a shot.
Yeah, I do too. And Sam Cosmi going in the second round, you know, I think he's got a real chance to do some damage there. You know, much was made of him being a three-star guy. And, you know, I'll be honest, I wasn't as impressed with Cosmi as I thought I was going to be his final season. So, you know, he's got it to prove too. Joseph Osai going to the Bengals, good spot for him. And I'm not going to say Joseph Osai is going to be a star because he wasn't a star in college. He only had five sacks, and I think three of those came in Stillwater against the Cowboys. But he's fast. He's athletic. He can run. He really fits the role of NFL linebackers now, playing in space. So I think he's going to have a good career. TQ Graham, I don't know, could he be the next Puna Ford? You know, slips all the way to the fifth round.
I don't know that he's in that class.
I don't either. I agree.
But you know, Puna's a special guy at that size and being able to just win matchups at 5'11" against guys that's much bigger than he is. If he makes the Falcons, I think he'd be a really good rotation guy. I don't know that he's a 5 or 6 year starter in this league. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. Caden Stearns, fifth round to Denver. I'm sure he was stunned he went that low. But
he just didn't play well in 3 years.
I know. His best year was his freshman year.
So he got drafted based on measurables and being a good athlete, not being a great football player. They're hoping that they could turn that athleticism into something that's going to be beneficial in a franchise that's known for producing really good safeties.
And he's a tough guy. He's got to tackle better, you know, and improve his pass coverage as well. So, I don't know. It kind of shows you where Texas has been when your star quarterback, who's, you know, a top 10 Texas quarterback, goes to the sixth round, and three of your five guys went fifth round or lower. That's not CFP caliber draft showing, and that's, I don't know if it's not really news to any of us, and I wrote this week they probably won't get anybody in the first round next year. You know, I think the earliest could be Bijan Robinson and Alfred Collins 2 years from now. But do you see anybody special enough to be a first round possibility off this Texas roster next spring?
Bijan's going to be, he'll be back because he's just a sophomore. So next spring, man, I'm duck. Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of thin.
It's thin. I don't think so.
I don't either.
But in a couple of years, I like Alfred Collins.
Yep.
I like Bijan if he stays healthy.
The running backs don't always go in the first round
they
either.
They don't unless they're great. And if he can put up a couple of 1,500-yard seasons, sure. Because remember, Chuba Hubbard put up massive numbers. He wasn't an early pick. So, you know, I like Bijan Robinson. I don't know that he's a game breaker on that level, but I think he can really move some chains. He's a power runner. He's not Derrick Henry, but he has the potential to be a guy that's similar to Derrick.
I asked Sark, our last get-together with him, was how many elite players he had. He kind of danced around that, as did Tom Herman a few years ago. And that's what they're lacking, elite players. When he said, well, I'm not sure how you define that. Well, part of the definition be, could you start at Alabama? Are you considered a first or second round draft pick potential? That kind of thing. Are you a
You should have said, you know, the guys that you start that you coached at Alabama that are being drafted in the first round. Do you have any of those? That's all you had to ask him. Yeah, there's no reason to dance around it. I mean, these guys mostly were 4 year ago. Let's see, Caden Stearns left early. Sam Cosmi left early, right? But Osai Graham and Ellinger were Tom Herman guys. And Tom Herman did, in four seasons did not produce a first-round pick. And if Sark doesn't produce first-round picks, the Longhorns are still going to be a middle-of-the-pack type team, a team name that might threaten top 10 in some seasons, but not a true threat to national prominence, to the big dogs like Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, teams of that ilk.
So Tom Herman had some top 10 recruiting classes nationally, but to be on that Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State level, you got to be top three and put them back to back to back and do it over and over, because some of them are going to be busts. Some of them are going to be in the transfer portal, but you've got to just build layer upon layer of depth. And that's what Sark's responsibility is, and especially offensive defensive line, because they really haven't had the difference makers the last 10 years at those positions. They might have a player, you know, like a Malcolm Brown or a Puna Ford or somebody who turns out to be a really good player at the NFL level, but you want game changers and difference makers. And that's the task that Sarkisian has moving forward.
Well, Doc, that'll do it for episode 220 of On Second Thought. Great show today. Coach Jim Schlossnagel came through and really entertained us. Just appreciate him. We'll do it again next week for the Duck Kirk Bowls. I'm Cedric Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Sed and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.